Nobelov dinamit.
Kdo so bili Nobelovci?
Kdo jim je dal keš?
Kako so ga srali?
In zakaj smo jih malikovali?
No, danes imamo pa en poseben treatment v Nobelovem dinamitu. Namreč aktualnega Nobelovca bomo malce predstavili. Oziroma...
Predstavil se bo sam.
Tako, ja. Mi bomo samo rekli, da boste poslušali pač prvi del Obamovega predavanja. Ne? To je moralo biti hilarious. Ob prejemu Nobelove nagrade za mir, kot veste, Barack Obama, prvi temnopolti ameriški predsednik, za zdaj zadnji ameriški predsednik, ne, on najbolj felišen, predstavljen v vseh, kako bi se reklo, časopisih, političnih prilogah, novicah in podobno. Vsega, v bistvu ga vsakdo pozna. Če ga ne poznate, niste na tekočem.
Glavni gospod Hussein, no.
Ja, tako. No,
dajmo ga poslušati.
Poslušajmo, kaj bo on predaval o miru.
Your Majesties, Your Royal Highnesses, distinguished members of the Norwegian Nobel Committee, citizens of America and citizens of the world. I receive this honor with deep gratitude and great humility. It's an award that speaks to our highest aspirations, that for all the cruelty and hardship of our world, we are not mere prisoners of fate. Our actions matter and can bend history in the direction of justice. And yet I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge the considerable controversy that your generous decision has generated. In part, this is because I am at the beginning and not the end of my labors on the world stage. Compared to some of the giants of history who have received this prize, Schweitzer and King, Marshall and Mandela, my accomplishments are slight. And then there are the men and women around the world who've been jailed and beaten in the pursuit of justice. Those who toil in humanitarian organizations to relieve suffering. The unrecognized millions whose quiet acts of courage and compassion inspire even the most hardened cynics. I cannot argue with those who find these men and women, some known, some obscure to all but those they help, to be far more deserving of this honor than I. But perhaps the most profound issue surrounding my receipt of this prize is the fact that I am the commander-in-chief of a military, of a nation, in the midst of two wars. One of these wars is winding down. The other is a conflict that America did not seek, one in which we are joined by 42 other countries, including Norway, in an effort to defend ourselves and all nations from further attacks. Still, we are at war. And I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in a distant land. And some will kill. And some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace, and our effort to replace one with the other. Now, these questions are not new. War in one form or another appeared with the first man. At the dawn of history, its morality was not questioned. It was simply a fact, like drought or disease. The manner in which tribes and then civilizations sought power and settled their differences. And over time, as codes of law sought to control violence within groups, so did philosophers and clerics and statesmen seek to regulate the destructive power of war. The concept of a just war emerged, suggesting that war is justified only when certain conditions were met. If it is waged as a last resort or in self-defense, if the force used is proportional, and if, whenever possible, civilians are spared from violence. Of course, we know that for most of history, this concept of just war was rarely observed. The capacity of human beings to think up new ways to kill one another proved inexhaustible, as did our capacity to exempt from mercy those who looked different or prayed to a different god. Wars between armies gave way to wars between nations, total wars, in which the distinction between combatant and civilian became blurred. In the span of 30 years, such carnage would twice engulf this continent. And while it's hard to conceive of a cause more just than the defeat of the Third Reich and the Axis powers, World War II was a conflict in which the total number of civilians who died exceeded the number of soldiers who perished. In the wake of such destruction, and with the advent of the nuclear age, it became clear to victor and vanquished alike that the world needed institutions to prevent another world war. And so, a quarter century after, the United States Senate rejected the League of Nations, an idea for which Woodrow Wilson received this prize. America led the world in constructing an architecture to keep the peace, a Marshall Plan and a United Nations, mechanisms to govern the waging of war, treaties to protect human rights, prevent genocide, restrict the most dangerous weapons. In many ways, these efforts succeeded. Yes, terrible wars have been fought and atrocities committed, but there has been no Third World War. The Cold War ended with jubilant crowds dismantling a wall. Commerce has stitched much of the world together. Billions have been lifted from poverty. The ideals of liberty and self-determination, equality and the rule of law have haltingly advanced. We are the heirs of the fortitude and foresight of generations past. And it is the legacy for which my own country is rightfully proud. And yet, a decade into a new century, this old architecture is buckling under the weight of new threats. The world may no longer shudder at the prospect of war between two nuclear superpowers, but proliferation may increase the risk of catastrophe. Terrorism has long been a tactic, but modern technology allows a few small men with outsized rage to murder innocents on a horrific scale. Moreover, wars between nations have increasingly given way to wars within nations. The resurgence of ethnic or sectarian conflicts, the growth of secessionist movements, insurgencies, and failed states. All these things have increasingly trapped civilians in unending chaos. In today's wars, many more civilians are killed than soldiers. The seeds of future conflict are sown. Economies are wrecked, civil societies torn asunder, refugees amassed, children scarred. I do not bring with me today a definitive solution to the problems of war. What I do know is that meeting these challenges will require the same vision, hard work, and persistence of those men and women who acted so boldly decades ago. And it will require us to think in new ways about the notions of just war and the imperatives of a just peace. We must begin by acknowledging a hard truth. We will not eradicate violent conflict in our lifetimes. There will be times when nations, acting individually or in concert, will find the use of force not only necessary, but morally justified.
I make this statement mindful of what Martin Luther King Jr. said in this same ceremony years ago. Violence never brings permanent peace. It solves no social problem. It merely creates new and more complicated ones. As someone who stands here as a direct consequence of Dr. King's life work, I am living testimony to the moral force of nonviolence. I know there's nothing weak, nothing passive, nothing naive in the creed and lives of Gandhi and King. But as a head of state sworn to protect and defend my nation, I cannot be guided by their examples alone. I face the world as it is and cannot stand idle in the face of threats to the American people. For make no mistake, evil does exist in the world. A nonviolent movement could not have halted Hitler's armies. Negotiations cannot convince Al-Qaeda's leaders to lay down their arms. To say that force may sometimes be necessary is not a call to cynicism, it is a recognition of history, the imperfections of man, and the limits of reason. I raise this point, I begin with this point, because in many countries there is a deep ambivalence about military action today, no matter what the cause. And at times this is joined by a reflexive suspicion of America, the world's sole military superpower. Yet the world must remember that it was not simply international institutions, not just treaties and declarations, that brought stability to a post-World War II world. Whatever mistakes we have made, the plain fact is this: the United States of America has helped underwrite global security for more than six decades with the blood of our citizens and the strength of our arms. The service and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform has promoted peace and prosperity from Germany to Korea and enabled democracy to take hold in places like the Balkans. We have borne this burden not because we seek to impose our will. We have done so out of enlightened self-interest, because we seek a better future for our children and grandchildren, and we believe that their lives will be better if others' children and grandchildren can live in freedom and prosperity. So yes, the instruments of war do have a role to play in preserving the peace. And yet this truth must coexist with another: that no matter how justified, war promises human tragedy. The soldier's courage and sacrifice is full of glory, expressing devotion to country, to cause, to comrades in arms. But war itself is never glorious, and we must never trumpet it as such. So part of our challenge is reconciling these two seemingly irreconcilable truths: that war is sometimes necessary, and war at some level is an expression of human folly. Concretely, we must direct our effort to the task that President Kennedy called for long ago. Let us focus, he said, on a more practical, more attainable peace, based not on a sudden revolution in human nature, but on a gradual evolution in human institutions. A gradual evolution of human institutions.
No, tako, to je bil prvi del Obamovega mirovnega govora oziroma govora ob podelitvi Nobelove nagrade. Kot ste slišali, veliko kontrastov znotraj teksta, veliko vprašanj in ton, pri katerem veda, morda sem dobil nagrado in sem za to hvaležen, ampak morda bi se moral zamisliti in je vrniti nazaj, kot so tudi kasneje mnogi kritizirali, ne, moral, to bi je po besedah mnogih tudi moral storiti, zdaj pa ali ja ali ne ostane na vsakem posebej, da to presodi.
Strinjam. Se strinjam, kaj ne, meni sam to, mislim, ok, morajo povedati, da, da pač, da bije ne vem koliko vojn, da ena kao gre proti koncu in proti temu, s tem je nekako opravil svojo dušo, ne.
Uh-huh.
Zdaj lahko razglabamo v morali, uh-huh. tako kot si rekel, v nedogled, itak bo sam presodil. Lahko pa rečem, da je zelo zanimivo naglasil te tretji rajh.
Rajš?
The Third Reich. Reich. The Third Reich.
Ja, ta res bo dobro.
Tok pač o moče katerih vrhuncih tega govora. Ok, to je to, ne. Torej je bil Nobelo dinamit za danes, naslednjič najverjetneje drug del njegovega govora, gospoda Huseina. Sicer pa prihajamo.
Še, še kakšen komad pa nulta obvestila.
To je to.
To je to, ja.
Nobelov dinamit.
Kdo so bili Nobelovci?
Kdo jim je dal keš?
Kako so ga srali?
In zakaj smo jih malikovali?